This is Lecture 2 of the Christian Mystery Collection of Lectures by Rudolf Steiner. It's actually Lecture 1.2. I'm doing the prologue as one section. It's entitled The Significance of Christmas from the Perspective of Spiritual Science, given on December 15, 1906 in Leipzig. Many people today have no relationship to Christmas other than lighting the candles on the Christmas tree. Yet the Christmas tree is the most recent symbol of the Christmas festival. Even in the regions where it first appeared, it has been known only for the past 100 years. It is not, as many believe, an ancient pagan tradition. The great festival of humanity now standing before us is as old, ancient even, as the Christmas tree is new. This sublime Christmas festival has been known for as long as earthly human beings have sensed that there is something above them that leads them beyond the human to the godly human, something that lifts human beings beyond themselves. We find a statement in John's Gospel that can serve as a leading thought for the Christmas festival. Quote, "He must increase, but I must decrease," unquote, John 3:30. We discover in this statement the connection between the two most important yearly festivals. John himself witnesses to the fact that he must decrease, while the other, Christ, increases. St. John's Day occurs when the day is longest, but behind external material appearances in their transitory nature, something arises. During the waning days of St. John's tide, it is beautifully expressed in John's Gospel, quote, "And the light shines in the darkness," unquote, John 1:5. Within the darkness lives the spiritual light, which is more luminous and alive than all the forms of material light. The life of the great light in the darkness is the content of the Christian festival of Christmas, which was celebrated in all religions in ancient times, and which prophetically pointed to the great spiritual sun hero, Jesus Christ. S-U-N, sun hero. Through the perspective of spiritual science, we understand today the Christian festival of Christmas, which has been experienced as the festival of idealism for 2,000 years. When church services begin and the candles are lit in the holy night, in the darkness of midnight, they shine out into the darkness. This signifies that one day, when everything on earth has met death, parenthesis, since all that is merely human must one day die, parenthesis, then just as Christ made it true, the triumphant soul that lifts itself to a light-filled life will live in a resurrection body, even if the earth as a material body explodes into countless atoms. The soul of the whole earth, with all the human souls who will have been taken up into it, will be lifted out of this darkness from the earth's destruction. Jesus Christ is the ideal, the example, that shows us not only that the soul of the earth will achieve this resurrection, but that all human beings on the earth have the same certainty. Not only is the physical sun an image of the Christ being, but so is the waxing spiritual sun. When all forces have been transformed, when the body of earth has been brought to a state where it is burning with the fire of love, then the earth will be totally permeated by the Christ principle. The light of Christmas is a symbol of this. The three kings are symbolized by their gifts. Gold symbolizes wisdom and kingly power. Myrrh, victory over death, and incense, spiritualized etheric substance within which the God who overcame death is embodied. Through these three symbols, Christ is present as king, as the victor over death, and as the fulfillment of all earthly development. Everyone initiated in esotericism feels the birth of the child of God in this way, prophesied in the mysteries before Christ's time and still experienced afterward. The mystery schools were not institutions like churches or schools in an external sense. Rather, they were educational as well as cultic centers where people learned wisdom, devotion, and a faith that was both a gnosis of facts and deep insight into reality. There were greater and lesser mysteries. Those admitted after many trials to the lesser mysteries saw dramatic presentations of external truths that were experienced inwardly in the souls of the higher initiates. The greatest moments in the evolution of humanity may be compared to the experiences of people who are born blind, but are given sight through an operation, an entirely new world opens up for them. The eyes of the spirit are opened for initiates. In light and color, a world of spirit reveals itself, an entirely new and much larger world than the physical, a world full of beings and inhabitants. All things appear to them as alive. In this moment, initiates experience the birth of their higher selves. This was called the Festival of the Inner Christ. What these chosen people were able to experience, and what initiates are able to experience even today, was an ideal for those in the lesser mysteries, an ideal they could all hope to achieve sooner or later. Those who know that everyone must pass through many lives can be certain that such an awakening can be attained, that initiation will also one day be reality for them. They can be assured that the awakening of Christ within them will be achieved, a Christmas because the light will shine within them. The passage from John's Gospel will then be reversed, quote, and the light will be understood in the darkness, unquote. This transformation was portrayed in the mysteries. The great Christian event was a repetition, in the physical world, of what happened for every initiate in the mysteries. In the lesser mysteries, in the form of pictures, in the greater mysteries, within human beings. In the lesser mysteries, the important experience of the inner Christ was portrayed at a particular time of the year, when the sun sent the least amount of light to the world in the longest winter night, as it still is today at the Christmas festival. Let us consider the picture that symbolized in the lesser mysteries the inner meaning of human evolution. The people who were to see it were in a sacred mood in the holy night, gathered in complete darkness at midnight. A muffled, thundering, roaring sound could be heard, which transformed gradually into wonderful rhythmic tones and harmonious sounds, the music of the spheres. A dimly lit body, a weakly illuminated sphere, became visible. This symbolized the earth. Rings flowing into one another arose gradually from this weakly shining earth disk. These belonged to the tones and had the colors of the rainbow. The rings expanded toward all sides, the divine iris. The sun, shining through the watery mists and fog, appeared in this way to the people of ancient Atlantis, called Niflheim in Germanic mythology. This vision grew brighter and brighter. Gradually the seven colors became pale gold and violet. The figure shone brighter and brighter. The light grew more powerful until it was transformed into the brightest body in the sun. The brightest body in the sky, the sun. Then at the center of this sun the name of Christ appeared, always in the same language as that of the people in which the mystery religion was cultivated. It was said that those who participated in this celebration had, quote, seen the sun at midnight, unquote, meaning that a symbol of spiritual vision appeared to them. Those whose spiritual eyes were opened experienced all matter as transparent. They saw through the earth. They actually saw the sun at midnight. They were victorious over matter. The sun at midnight appeared to them in its complementary colors, reddish-violet. For Christians, what appeared cosmically in this grand world symbol is Jesus Christ's appearance on earth, translated into human terms. We will all see the sun at midnight. This does not in any way contradict what is found in the New Testament. Christ is the being who will transform and purify what is now connected with the lower realm. He will spiritualize what is still connected to the earthly. He is the sun in the spiritual realm. A Christian esotericist, or theosophical Christian, feels this way about Jesus Christ. Initiates know that at this time of year, when cold and darkness are at their peak on earth, certain forces move through space and the constellations are most favorable for spiritual awakening. Students were taught that they should not be satisfied with ordinary human knowledge. Rather, they must learn to survey all of humanity, Earth's entire history. The students were told to look toward the time when the Earth was still united with the sun. Humanity at that time lived in the light of the sun. What would later become Earth was filled with the power of the Spirit that shone forth from every being. Then came the time when the sun separated from the Earth. The light began to shine on the earth from outside, and it became dark within human beings. This was the point when human beings began their development toward a time in the distant future when they will again bear light within themselves. Then the higher human being, the sun human, who carries light within and possesses the power to illuminate, will be developed in them. The earth thus arose from the light. It passes through the darkness and will come again to the light of the sun. Just as in autumn and winter the power of the sun's rays diminishes, the spiritual recedes completely during the time when the human being should learn of matter and the external things of earth. But the spiritual power grows again, and what Paul expresses with the parable of the wheat seed takes place at Christmas. If the little seed does not die in the earth, no new fruit can arise. Old life passes away during the Christmas season, and new life arises in its womb. From these days forward, the sap begins to rise in the trees, new life flows forth, and the light begins to grow in the darkness that had been increasing until then. This is what a Christian thinks, but translated into spiritual terms. The gesture of downward motion into matter must pass away to make room for the gesture of shooting upward. Christ came into the world so that what should lead upward to the highest could be born of lowliness. In the stall, we see a transformation described in the Gospel of Luke. It is a variation of what ancient wisdom called a cave. A festival was celebrated in hollowed-out boulders in different ways by the various peoples. The next day, a second festival followed, showing how new life came from earth, from stone. This was also a symbol for new growth of the spiritual out of dying earthly elements. Everywhere in the inner sanctuaries of Egypt, in the Eleusinian mysteries, in the Orphic cult in Greece, in the Near East among the Babylonians and Chaldeans, in the Mithras cult of the Persians, and in the mysteries of the Indians, the Holy Night was celebrated in the same way. What the initiates experienced was seen in the form of a visual representation by the participants in the lesser mysteries. What was presented was a prophetic indication of the birth of Christ in the human being. It is said that initiates who have achieved this level are at the sixth stage. There were seven such steps of initiation. The quote-unquote raven, which mediated between the world of spirit and the external world, was on the first step. In the Bible we hear of the raven that came to Elijah. Legends speak of the raven of Wotan and even of the raven of the Emperor Barbarossa in Kyffhauser. Footnote: Frederick I, known as Frederick Barbarossa, 1123 to 1190, Holy Roman Emperor, 1152 to 1190, and King of Germany and Italy. After quelling the rebellious German nobility, he failed to subdue papal authority in Italy and conceded supremacy to Pope Alexander III, 1177. He drowned while leading the Third Crusade. End of footnote. We find the esotericists on the second step. Such a person was admitted to the inner sanctuary. The third step was that of the fighter. Those who achieved this stage were allowed to intervene in the external world on behalf of spiritual truth. Initiates who achieved the fourth step were called lions. Their consciousness had expanded beyond their own individuality to the consciousness of their entire tribe. Consider, for example, the lion. Initiates of the fifth step had taken into their consciousness not only the consciousness of the tribal spirit, but also that of the folk spirit. They therefore were given the name of their folk. One was called, for example, a Persian. Jesus called Nathanael a true Israelite, thus recognizing him as a fifth-degree initiate. The designation of those having reached the sixth step is related to an important characteristic. As we look around in nature, we see the beings of nature developed from the lowest forms up to the human being, and from the average human being up to those in whom Christ has been born. In the lowest beings, we see the rhythms of life everywhere, rhythms imposed by the sun being. Flowers always blossom at the same time of the year according to their species. They open their blossoms, every species, at the same time of the day. Animals also display annual rhythms in the most important functions of life. Human beings alone are increasingly losing such rhythms and becoming free of this compulsion that was also imposed on them originally. When love of all beings awakens in them and flows through them, however, a new rhythm of their own is born out of them. This rhythm is as regular as that of the sun, which never deviates in the slightest from its course. We can hardly imagine the consequences of this. An image of the sun's course through space was seen in an initiate of the sixth step, a sun that bestows blessing on the earth. It was the image of Christ in the human being and in the spiritual world. Thus the sixth degree initiate was called the Sun Hero. The students' souls trembled when they saw the Sun Heroes. The Christ was born within them, that event that was experienced as birth on the spiritual plane. The birth of the historical Jesus was placed by the initiates of the first centuries into the darkest time of the year, since the spiritual sun rose with his appearance. Consequently, the first Christians also introduced the midnight mass, a cultus around the dark midnight hour when a sea of light illuminated the altar. The highest degree of initiation was that of the Father. Let me read that again. The highest degree of initiation was that of the quote-unquote Father. What had so often occurred individually within the mystery schools, far from external events, took place openly within Jesus Christ in outer world history. The human soul can experience nothing higher than what was brought externally into the physical world in the person of the conqueror of death, the bringer of the promise of external life for the soul. The bringer of the promise of eternal life for the soul. In what grew out of a dying world as new life, initiates experienced the birth of the Christ child in the spiritual world. One who does not think the spiritual is separated from the physical world feels a deep connection between the sun at Christmas and the life of the spirit that is developed out of the life of the world. The birth of the greatest ideal is placed in the holy night, the greatest ideal that there is for the world, which will be realized when the earth reaches its goal. What is now prophetically announced will then be reality. The love that conquers death shines from the lights on the Christmas tree. Likewise, this love will shine from all human beings in the future. It is present now as a perspective. In the meaning of the Christmas festival, we feel something coming to us from the distant future, but it has been celebrated ever since ancient times. Understood properly, this festival will again acquire a much greater significance for us. The Christmas tree also will become more important for us as an image of the tree of paradise, which you all know from the book of Genesis. Quote-unquote paradise is an image of the higher nature of the human being with nothing evil attached to it. Knowledge could be acquired only at the expense of life. A legend explains how this fact was regarded by those who know. When Seth wanted to return to paradise, a cherub with a fiery sword allowed him in. He discovered there that the tree of life and the tree of knowledge had become intertwined. Following the instructions of the cherub, he was allowed to take three seeds from this combined tree. That tree represents what the human being would one day become and what the initiate had already achieved. When Adam died, Seth placed the three seeds into Adam's mouth. From the seeds a flaming bush grew, within which stood the words Aje, Asher, Aje, I am who is, was, and will be. The legend explains further that Moses made his miraculous staff from the wood of that tree. Later the door of Solomon's temple was made from the same wood. Then a piece of it fell into the pool at Bethesda and imbued it with miraculous powers. And finally the cross of Christ was fashioned from the same wood. It is a picture of the life that passes away in death, yet has within it the power to bring forth new life. A great symbol is there before us, life that has overcome death, wood from the seeds of paradise. This perishing and reviving life is presented to us as the rose cross. It is not without reason that the great German philosopher Goethe says, quote, "And as long as you do not know this, die and become. You are nothing more than a dull guest on the dark earth." End quote. What a wonderful connection between the tree of paradise, the wood on the cross, and the life that arises from it. The Christ idea, the holy night, should mean for us the birth of the eternal human being within temporal life. We should apply it to ourselves right now. Quote, "The light shines in the darkness," unquote, and gradually the darkness must comprehend the light. All souls in whom Christmas has stimulated the proper spark will feel strongly what Christmas brings to birth within them. A capacity that will develop into an inner strength, placing them in a position to see, feel, and will, so that the passage from the Gospel of John is reversed. Quote, "The light shines in the darkness, and gradually the darkness has comprehended the light." End quote, footnote 12, This is a translation of Die Bedeutung des Christfestes vom geisteswissenschaftlichen Standpunkt, from Das christliche Mysterium, Rudolf Verlag, 1981, Collected Works, Volume 97. That's the end of Lecture 1.2 in the book The Christian Mystery.